Welcome to RevCast, a Civilization podcast focused on its console platforms. El Thrasher?
Scotty X.
Japanese.
Yeah, like that. Like, I mean, not to call you out, Scotty. I mean,
this is your normal host, Scotty X, and Jeppy Knees. Also, we've got with us, it's returning. It's denied. I suppose we'll start off with our tournament roundup. We've had a few tournaments finished lately. The first one is the PS3 one, won by you, Jeppy.
I won my first tournament. That was pretty cool. We did an 8-man round robin tourney on PS3. We had some nice players, and me and Scotty ended up being in the championship, and I beat him 4-2. With the highlight being beating him off of Five Square Island with the French, and he had the Russians, and I ended up sinking a galley he had that had his whole army on there, and that just shifted the tide, so I ended up winning.
Got a little too aggressive and threw a little bit too much at him. But my position hadn't been, it was probably better than his Five Square Island, but I hadn't felt so good about it. So therefore, I was kind of pushing to bring some pressure.
I engineered a great scientist for my great person. Scotty taught me how to do that. So I made my chances of getting a great scientist higher, and a great scientist, I used it for navigation. And that's how I sunk his galley, and that pretty much ended it. I was sitting there waiting. I had a militia kind of by his galley. I was sitting there waiting for him to move towards my city so I could sink it. Right on time. And
yeah, I've done that to Scotty a couple times, and then one of them in the America game.
Yeah, that's what I've always been impressed with by you, Jeff. You know, I mean, it's as well that you're learners. See something new or read something new or learn about it, and then you can put it into application in the game. You know, there's a few other players, like particularly some of the guys we might see regularly on Xbox or sometimes on the rank lay, who you know are going to play in a certain way. They play the same way every time, and regardless of whether that strategy works or not, you see it again the next time you play them.
Yeah.
After that tournament, we started another tournament. Me and Scotty are in the finals again. This was a pretty tough tournament. We invited Multiplayer Beast. He's one of the best players. We had Farm, also known as Perform.
Won a lot of tournaments on the Xbox side. Yep.
But me and Scotty made it through that minefield, and we're back in the finals again. And next episode, we'll let y'all know what happened. I'm trying to win back-to-back, but Scotty has something to say about that.
Fair enough, stopping you this time. And over on the Xbox side, we've got the other champion from a recent tournament, Mr. It's Denied.
I just got lucky. Played Mopuck, and then I started on the Seventh Island, so I lost that one. Then, I got lucky like 6 games in a row or something like that. And then I won the tournament.
You're facing a lot of the top civs as well.
Oh, yeah. I played Germans like 5 times, I think, or 4 times.
Yeah, I think we need to mention that this tournament was a double elimination tournament. So he lost his first game. So if he would have lost any more games, it was over. But was the finals also?
It was a best of 3 in the finals. And the final, I mean, there was nothing to brag about. I mean, it was just I got better starts. The first one actually was a bad start, but I got a walk-in. The AI was nice enough. I guess they thought I wasn't a threat. They walked diagonally towards me, and it was a single tile that was connecting them, you know? So I was able to block them off, or, you know, walk towards their cap and while they were walking towards mine, and I had got their one turn in time to walk in on Spain for nav. But I got pottery for my first barb and 2 friendlies that gave me upgrades, so I had 0 gold. I didn't get my second barb until like 1900 or something.
I guess he was struggling over on his side of the map as well, was he?
Oh, no, he wasn't. But I got Great Wall late in the game, and he couldn't put any pressure on me. He was Romans, and I was Russians with navigation now. And once I got Great Wall, he knew it was over because, I mean, he can't put any pressure on me, and, I mean, I could do whatever I want.
Yeah, but also the fact that you got navigation, in his mind, he might have thought, hey, man, I'm up against it, even though you were actually struggling.
Yeah.
He has
Yeah,
no,
but he doesn't quit unless he knows. And even then, even if he knows it's over, he almost that never quits. The only reason he knew that was over is because I got Great Wall and I could attack him.
Ah, I see. Congratulations on that.
Thanks.
So you ended up winning two in a row? Or you
Two in a row, yeah.
I'd like to mention that on PS3, it's either me or Scotty, but we're going to host a double elimination tournament as well because it will win pretty cool on Xbox side. Only difference is we're going to make it a three-game series to get your one loss, you know. Instead of one game being your one loss, you play a three-game series against the person, and if you lose those two, that's considered your one loss.
Oh, I got you. Yeah, that's cool.
Just so it won't be at random, because one loss...
Yeah, it happens real easy, I mean.
Yeah.
Really easy. Even in a three-game, it's really easy to lose that, but better than one. And, yeah. What's the next tournament you guys got playing on Xbox?
Well, our triple elimination one, which I've set up, is ready to go. If we had one extra person, it'd be good, but we've got the format there for doing it with any number of people, so I'm ready to kick it off with the people that we have now, which is me, Jab, More Pork, It's, and Moradin, and Dan, and some other people.
Are you the odds-on favorite, It's?
Probably not. Everybody knows I got lucky in those other tournaments. I was just floating around and ran into stuff.
It's just got lucky in every tournament he's played, pretty much.
Yeah.
You know, it's crazy because when It's first started playing, he came around the forums a little before me. I haven't been on the forums that long either. I used to always read his posts, and he used to always say how, you know, I got beat because you got lucky. You got this, you got that, you got lucky. And now that he's winning, he's saying the same thing about himself.
The main topic of our webcast this time, Firaxis has come out saying in a recent article that Firaxis is unlikely to release a Civ Rev 2 and that they're not working on it at the moment.
Yeah, they kind of poo-pooed it. They kind of said it's like basically Civ is not made for the game consoles because I guess it's such a consolidated, such a compact version of the game and the game is so robust. But, I mean, Civ Rev is one of the best games in history to me.
Yeah,
I just don't understand. I mean,
I think they will eventually.
What I suggested that they might do, or that they should do, because the new consoles are going to come out, and for example, I've been playing some retro games on my computer, like Doom 2 and whatever else on my Xbox, that they can just start out and release a Civ Rev, but with extra stuff on it, add-ons like map editing, the and fixes for, you know, downgrade America's power and fix various glitches that we know of.
Yeah, like advisor glitches and stuff like that.
Yeah, just the freezes would be great.
That sort of stuff. Make it smoother, run better, slightly increase the graphics, this sort of thing. Nothing that's going to really require them to spend millions of dollars and get a massive amount of complex team together. But just the same thing onto the new platform with using just a bit of the new functionality there.
Almost like Civ Rev 1.5.
Yeah. And then they'd have something that they can resell the Civ Rev community and say, here's a new one for the new platform. That's what I hope they could start off with. And cause since obviously we're not very likely to get a Civ Rev 2, and definitely not at launch, maybe sometime in the future.
Yeah, I would say, depending on the software that they add to the new console, it's supposed to be really advanced. I don't really think it's going to be that much more advanced, but it's supposed to be. Well, I think it's supposed to be more compatible for new future software that comes out. So whenever that software comes out, and so that they could put more into the Civ game, like, I mean, not as much as they put in the computer Civ, but close to as much, whenever it becomes that advanced, I think they might consider making a Civ Rev 2. And that'll probably be after they make the next Civilization game for the PC. I would say probably 5 to 10 years would be my guess that they would come out. I mean, that's a long time, but that's how long I think it would take for them to get a Civ Rev 2 out, like on the console, and for the consoles to be advanced enough to be able to take that. You know what I mean?
In my opinion, there's a kind of the Civ Rev games, if you continue going like they went Civ 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, it keeps on getting more complex and more difficult to just pick it up and play it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They have this core following who continue to come in and use the series, but that core following will get smaller and smaller as time goes on. Slowly people drop off out of it. That's something for them to milk and to make use of, but ideally they'll be able to bring some new people in and...
Yeah.
And like the Xbox platform of CivRev 2 or mobile platform ones where, you know, that you might play on the mobile phone, but you actually want to be able to use the swipe and all this other sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Or these other sort of functionality, as opposed to having to look at real complex numbers and do calculations and things and, you know, all of the CivRev 5 sort of stuff.
Right. I mean, for me, CivRev is just, it's almost like a, I mentioned this on the forums before. It's like a game of chess for me. You know, I don't mind sitting down playing a game of chess. How long has chess been around? So some people feel like, oh, I got tired of CivRev. I'm not playing it anymore. But for me, it's just like, it's like a timeless board game almost.
Yeah, it's like chess, but with a knight that could sometimes be a queen. I mean...
If they'd just given us, like in CivRev 2, the map editing functionality, I could rejuvenate scenarios and things for other people to play.
They have that on the PC, like you can make your own maps.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would say that's pretty complex for a console, I mean.
Yeah, it is. And also, whoever creates the map would know it.
Well, I mean, yes, but this is about, hey, I created a realistic scenario.
I see.
Yeah, and you get great maps. You get great maps from the community. Like in Halo, they had tons of maps. In Halo 3, and like pretty much half the maps in matchmaking now were made by community. So if they put that technology out there and let people do it, they'd pretty come up with some pretty amazing things, I think.
I think that what Scotty said, it would be just a great idea. Just kind of patch up the first CivRev, and it would be awesome. Although you wouldn't get a bunch of new people to buy it, it would help us.
Yeah, yeah.
50 people in the community that still play it.
Yeah, there's a bunch of people that like playing ranked and stuff like that that don't go to the forums. I mean, not as much as Multi says, but
that's true.
Like Ziff was saying, that he was able to walk into a bar and talk to the bar owner and find out that the bar owner was playing CivRev. I mean, there must be enough of those casual players out there. And I, for example, met somebody who I know through a completely different, reasonably famous in New Zealand, who appeared to be playing CivRev as well. So there are people out there who play it like really casually, you know, sit down, play a game or something and don't really care too much about whether they're graded, I suppose, and, you know, don't care about the forum or anything like that.
Did it say in the article like 1.5 million bought CivRev or something like that?
Sold. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know how good that is compared to the PC. I'm not sure. I don't have those numbers, but it seems like pretty decent for this type of game.
Well, surely the amount of money you can convert out of Xbox games should be good because, you know, you'd have less of a pirating problem and all of that sort of thing.
I don't think the numbers are too bad. I think it's not something they were used to. And they just kind of lost interest in it, I think. I think that's what happened. They're just used to the PC and all the stuff they could do there, and then when they go to the console, they're limited immensely compared to the PC.
That should save them a lot of time and money.
Well, yeah, it should. But if it's not what they're comfortable with...
They do it for the love of it, to a degree, so...
Yeah.
I know some.
I would say, well, it takes a lot of time to do that. I mean, if it takes that much time just to figure out how to play, I would say it takes at least 5 to 10 times more time to actually make the game.
Yeah, even maybe even more.
Oh, yeah, easily.
I think to sum it up, Firaxis, we really, really want another CivRev. Please make it.
Yeah.
Yep.
I'm pretty confident in 5 to 10 years. I'm pretty confident. Console has the right software.
Eventually someone will dig it out of their archive.
Right, so you're talking about maybe PlayStation 5 and Xbox.
Or it could still be the same one. I mean, we've had 360 for 6-7 years. It's supposed to be compatible with a lot of new... And there was other game developers that were complaining, not just Firaxis, but there are other game developers complaining that 360 hardware isn't up to date and they can't put everything in the game they want to because it's limited by the Xbox. So once that gets upgraded close to PC capabilities, that's when I think that they will step back into the console. So, probably 5 to 10 years. Hope you're patient.
If they make it as robust as the Civ 5 or whatever is out, it won't be like CivRev. It'll be much more complex.
No, I think they could still make it more complex, but less time. Like, it'll be quick games like this, but it'll be a lot more intricate. Turns will take a little bit longer, you know, 5-10 minutes longer, but, I mean, it's still a lot quicker than a Civ game that could take a few days, I heard, or something like that, right?
Right, yeah.
Yeah, or even saving capabilities. Yeah, like if they add saving capabilities and people want to pick it up a week later or something like that, even that, I mean, that's what people do on the PC. I guess it could be hard to sleep if you're so excited, like you're about to take somebody over and, oh, I gotta go. I gotta go. Sorry. Oh, well, we'll finish this next week. I guess that could be a little annoying.
Yeah, there's a whole lot of little functionality like that would be quite good to add. And of course, if they add in too much of that, they may create glitches. But we could live with that on a saving game, I suppose.
Yeah.
You know, you restart the saving game, and then there's you know it's going to be a little less stable.
Someone will find a way to glitch that.
Oh, yeah.
So back to Civ Rev strategy, I guess. I understand you were playing around a little bit with the early currency strategy, Jeffy. How are you doing that? What's your tinkering?
Well, usually when I was doing it, it was with either Egypt or Japan. And when I had Egypt, I would go alphabet writing code of laws, and then I would go currency right after code of laws. If I had Colossus, then, you know, it was real easy. But if I had the Japanese, I might have maybe three or four cities by now, maybe a couple AI capitals. And what I found was with the Japanese, you know, if you get a market on one of those one-tile islands, that those are kind of hard to take. If you got enough money to throw up another market, it's hard to be beat with two markets. Although it's risky because someone could take it and someone could flip it. My results were all wins, but it wasn't against elite competition, so I can't say the best strategy.
How early are you talking about taking that? Like, what year usually do you start, like, on average?
It's all fluid because it depends on if I have my area secure.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Because if my area is not secure, I'm still building horses. I'm still building legions. So.
Yeah, but say you guys start teching the same turn, and that guy starts teching writing and code of laws, and you start teching currency. And by the time you have currency, he's only 20 beakers from code of laws. You still have to tech code of laws and writing. What are you going to do then? Like, that guy's already expanding. And, I mean, once you hit code of laws, you'll be able to put out a bunch of settlers because you got gold. But, I mean, it's going to take you so long to get the code of laws. How are you going to stop that guy?
Or the alternate scenario, you're going code of laws currency. You're spending 80 beakers on currency. He's spending 80 hammers on settlers and things going out. And in the meantime, he's going to try and tech navigation or whatever.
Yeah.
If you're safe with your cities, maybe. But, I mean, he might not take your market city. But if he takes your capital, that could be game over.
Right, which is why it's a risky strategy. And it's not one that I would advise everyone to do and do it every time. But some games, I might get it off a friendly hut.
Oh, yeah, that happens too. I've happened a few times, yeah.
Yeah, well, friendly hut, yes.
That's great, yeah.
That's a good question that I sometimes think about. So you're wandering around, you're playing a game, you're walking around, you see a friendly hut somewhere. Let's say, for example, you know you're going to get a tech from that friendly hut, or maybe even from one friendly hut or two friendly huts, two different scenarios. What tech are you going to try and get?
I want navigation.
Yeah.
You're going to go writing navigation, get the beaker jump to tech jump.
Invention, monarchy.
If I have enough beakers where I can get invention or monarchy, I want those instantly because I want that great person.
Yeah, I always go for those.
If I have a choice between monarchy, navigation, currency, I want monarchy. If I get that great builder and get Sam's castle, you're in trouble.
Unless I'm behind, I rarely go out of my way to tech navigation, and I think it's just a waste. All it leads is to galleons, and then by the time you're teching that, you should be close to cruisers anyways, so...
That's true, but it depends on if you got some hammers banked and you can get you know, a couple of cat armies over there to his neighborhood.
Oh yeah, it depends.
How much that would slow him down is worth it, you know, because while he's building all kind of units to try to defend itself and protect itself.
Yeah.
You're over there spreading out.
In the games I've played, unless you're Spain and you start out with it, or if you get it super early, you know, from the AI or walking or something like that, I say 8 to 9 out of 10 times, usually galleons. By the time I get to the point I can tech them, it's irrelevant because I'm so close to invention. I might as well spend those beakers on invention and cruisers.
Right. I don't tech it that often either, but if I can sneak and get it, then you know I'll try to get it.
If it's a little earlier on and you haven't exposed monarchy yet, but you will, not too long. Let's say you've got code of laws there. Would you just take the code of laws for the tech, or would you hold on to it a little bit and then you'd wait?
there's something like happens on the screen, a resync or something, where like I have a feeling, I'm not always right. I'm probably right about 60% of the time, but I have a feeling I'm going to get a tech from a hut. And usually when I do, whenever it's early like that, I try to get navigation, because all you need is writing and just do 20 beakers and then you can get navigation. And usually that's what I go for, because navigation early is really good, but when it's later in the game and you're already doing, you know, 70, 80, close to 100 beakers a turn, it's irrelevant, I think.
Okay, so when you start off, you'd be thinking writing, navigation, and then just a little later in the game, you're thinking monarchy, and then just a bit later in the game, obviously, invention.
Yeah, yeah.
So do you use legions a lot, though?
If I'm ahead, I have been lately, but usually it depends. It's very map-dependent and start-dependent. Do it both if I'm behind and ahead. That's the cool thing that that I like to do, is it's just very random. And Mopok does it a lot, too. I pretty much picked that up from him, where it's you don't know if he's going to do legions or not. And if he doesn't, that means he's expanding a lot, and he's going to out-tech you really bad if you're trying to prepare for legions. And if you don't prepare for it, then he's coming to the back city, and then you're really screwed. I think the best thing you could do in this game is be unpredictable. You can't have one strategy, because one strategy will not work. Like, there's a mixture of turtle and aggression, and you gotta know which one fits which situation correctly. Every game is different.
I heard the last RevCast, and you and telling Thrasher about how almost unstoppable the legions with the Galleon fleet is, with the single legions.
Yeah, yeah.
He just doesn't seem, he didn't seem to be a believer, though. He was like, well, you can put all your cities inside. But, you know, how often is it a river or a lake inside?
Oh, yeah, it's not going to work. Yeah. Bane's pretty unstoppable right there. But even with Fundy Legions, that's only 13.5. And, I mean, one arch army or even some single arch, by the time you do that, your city is gone. So it's like the best defense, I think, against that
is to have China.
is to take the cruisers.
Or America and be able to get cruisers.
Yeah, detect the cruisers really quick. That's what, when I was playing Mopok, it was about 50-50.
I think two Galleon fleets if you've got the hammers for it.
Yeah, that's...
Kill his on the sea.
But usually if you build that, it usually takes too long. I mean, if the guy got a fairly decent start...
Yeah.
So you need to get to him as quick as you can.
Yeah, the other option is for you to be attacking the back of his empire at the same time he's attacking the front of yours.
Yeah, yeah. But usually they won't try to attack you.
It's hard to reach Spain, though. It's hard to reach him.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe you could just start throwing away cities at the front, but I had this problem against it's in Spain, I think. If you get your Galleon fleet together, you think you're doing quite well, but if you don't go in the right direction, you end up attacking some isolated city in the middle of nowhere, or you're attacking from the wrong direction, and all of his cities are on the other coast, and it's going to be 10 turns to sail right around. You do have a bit of a problem, because in those 10 turns, he might actually get up to the tech that he needs.
Yeah.
It's important to have your barrack city in the right location. It's important to locate where he is and have your barrack city...
Well, Spain usually has map knowledge. That's the whole thing I was saying is you can't really hide your cities from Spain. Unless Spain gets a bad start, Spain usually sees over 90% of the map in, you know, 20 to 30 turns. So pretty much anywhere you can expand, it'll see your borders, at least, if not the whole city. So that's the cool thing about being in Spain, too.
Or they'll meet the AI, and the AI will tell me where you're at. Or...
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, with the vibes. Mm.
War civs that have the best chance of beating America are Spain, China, Zulu, and Aztecs, I would say. Those are the best chance. The other civs will just get obliterated.
Right, unless they're right on top of America, unless they get lucky.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, well, I'm thinking that the Zulu are the best, better than China even. They can just bring so much heat really quickly if played well.
Yeah, you need space away from the Zulu.
Yeah, I would say Spain can beat Zulu quite a bit, actually. It's just the first 10 turns you got to survive, really.
So few people survive those first 10 turns against Zulu, because they're 10 turns and they're all over the map, basically. They're meeting you from the north and south.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, I played a series against Multi where I had Spanish versus Zulu, and I was doing the build 7, 8, 9 single legions and drop them off. Yep. I think out of... 7 or 8 games, I only got to attack him once. In almost every game, he got fundy. So it was an aberration of what the final series would have been. But the Zulu, you know, they are a cut above Spanish, although the Spanish can, obviously the Spanish can beat.
There was an argument made, I think Thresher and Duke, I think, were making this argument, that if you select two civs, that tends to imply what the other civs are going to be. So it may be that Spain, Zulu, tends to have
Arabs
as a third.
I didn't really notice that when I was doing that.
If that's the case, it may be hard to get a fair matchup because Zulu will get the Arabs too often. You know?
I think it might have just been lucky, but I had to look into that. I was watching a couple of Jack of All Civs, his old videos, when he had a video against Thrasher's Americans, and he was the Aztec. I think it was the America's Cup. Got Monarchy, he got the Great Wall, but Americans got Code of Laws, and I just don't think it was winnable. And he had five takes pretty fast. You can't win it.
Yeah, there's some games that are unwinnable.
Because I think he made a couple of moves where he could have done something different and maybe brought a little more pressure, but I don't think it was winnable.
The cool thing about Aztecs is not just the horse army, if they get auto heal legions, and I noticed they get techs a lot from friendlies. There's been a few games where I've gotten a friendly, I've had legions before 3,000, because and as Aztecs, that's pretty brutal. Drop off two auto heal legion armies and an auto heal archer army, and then, oh, crap.
What you're seeing there is that the Aztecs extra 25 gold and the auto heal means that they get more units out faster. And so they have the most units on the field, and that gives them a better chance of the tech from that.
Yeah, probably.
Right. If you have most units on the field, and also you need to have more units than you have tech. If you have three tech, you need to have four or five units, and then your chances of getting a tech from Hutt increase. Let's say someone who starts with a tech. If you have the Arabs and you try to get horseback riding from a friendly, most of the time they don't give it to you because you have more tech than you have units, you know?
Yeah.
Because you start with one tech.
But if you're the US, you're going to have a little bit of an advantage because you've got a free unit there running around, so you might get that horseback riding from a hut straight off.
Which is why your chances of getting it increase. And it has something to do with gold also.
There's quite a complicated relationship in there, but yeah, and buildings as well. And so if you take out the guys of the buildings, then that helps.
Yeah, just don't pay that much attention to it. Just like, whatever happens, happens.
Sometimes you just wipe somebody out because if you just happen to walk along and see those three ticks or something, or three huts and get it three ticks, and all of a sudden just won the game. But most games, it's normal play. You know, you just have to get your legions out, you work them out, you arrive at the hut, you could wait for it, but you might as well get that 25 gold early because you need the 100, or the caravan, let's say, because you need to pump into a city and get that 100 gold in order to be able to get your extra city out and then be able to expand and take the extra AI cap and all the normal sort of things.
Yeah. I bought the game used like in 2010, but just because I played the demo and I loved the idea of the teching and, you know, the years go by and you get all this advanced tech. I love that idea. I thought it was cool. I thought it was multiplayer, but I mean, like, I went to the multiplayer one time and nobody came for like 5 or 10 minutes. I'm like, ah, shit, this is dead. And then I tried like a year later for some reason. I think I went to school and then something made me, history class, something made me want to play. I was like, oh, this would be cool if I could play this. And then I found a game. I'm like, oh, crap, there's a multiplayer. And then that's when I started playing.
When I started playing multiplayer, I was surprised that a person was moving at the same time as me. I was expecting that it's my turn, then his turn. And then I saw, you know, I saw his horse move on my turn. And I was like, the hell's going on here? But I ended up liking it. You know, some people kind of really dislike the fact that it's, although it's turn-based, it's not necessarily turn-based. It's you move at the same time.
Yeah.
But I kind of like that fact that, you know, although it leads to button races and this and that, I'm quick on the button, so I don't mind that.
You really don't want to be sitting around doing nothing, waiting for the other guy to do something in the game. That takes you out of the game, if you like, and it's all about immersion and civilization. That was Revcast. What does Thresher normally close out with?
I don't know. What do we usually close out with?
I don't know. Don't, when you're asking me, this is my second time.
Tell me it. Okay.
You guys are the experts here. Come on now. This is all on you guys.
This is Scotty X.
Denied.
And CB, also known as Japanese.
Yep, signing off. See you next time.
For more information about RevCast, Sibling Shows Polycast, and Modcast, or about Polycast in general, log on to the series' official website at thepolycast.net.
Record date:
May 24th, 2013.
Civilization Revolution Sound Clips. Copyright Take-Two Interactive. Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.